Welcome to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast, a podcast bringing you news and views about sustainable agriculture from across the southeastern United States. Every show will feature insightful interviews and deep dives into sustainable agriculture topics with farmers, ranchers, land-grant universities, and local food system advocates. Now, here's your host, Brennan Washington.
Welcome to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast. I'm your host, Brennan Washington, and I'm sitting here on another cloudy, dreary Georgia day. We've been getting hammered by rain, as has much of the Southeast. And they say a farmer should never complain about rain, but I'm going to complain about it. It's been hampering our ability to get some much-needed work done on our farm, and other farmers are facing the same issue. So I hope that its weather evens out pretty soon and that things dry up so farmers can go about their business and their livelihoods. So today we're going to be talking about politics and how it goes hand in hand with agriculture. So almost every area of our life in this country is affected somewhat by politics, and agriculture is no exception to that. When a lot of people talk about politics now, unfortunately in this country, political discourse has gotten so extreme that it's really hard to hold conversations with folks without things getting nasty or the discussion degenerating into name calling and all that stuff. But we need politics, and politics go hand in hand and with what we do in agriculture. And I want to spend a little time talking about it early in the year because there's some important things that are going to be happening in the political arena this year. One of the most important being the national elections that are coming up in the fall, both for the presidency and for the House and Senate. And we're not going to talk about that area of politics right now. There are other shows who could do that a lot better than I do. But I want to talk about politics as it concerns the aspects of agriculture. And so, for example, the Farm Bill is a big piece of political legislation that's done every 4 years, I believe it is. And that literally defines what gets done in an agriculture throughout the United States at all levels, from large scale agricultural production to little guys like me. And we need to start having more nuanced discussions with our legislatures, especially those of us in sustainable ag. I was talking to a good friend. Every year, Georgia has this legislative, I believe it's a breakfast, where you can come in and talk with your legislatures. And I think it's geared specifically to agriculture. And the person I was talking to bemoaned the fact that small-scale ag was not represented, sustainable ag to a large extent, and organic ag to a large extent was not represented. And he just bemoaned the fact that we could at least show up to these things and let our legislators know who we are and also get to know them, because there may be issues that come up where you're going to need to reach out to that legislature. You may not agree with that legislature on most of the things that they vote on or their political beliefs, but there are times we're going to have to go in and try to talk to people. Case in point being, there is a bill, I believe it just cleared the Georgia House Senate Committee. It was House Bill 545. And in a nutshell, what it does is limit the ability of people to sue an agricultural entity for creating any type of public nuisance. So that could be smells, odors, noise, that type of stuff. I just found out about the law. Someone sent me an article about it not too long ago, and I read it. And I think the law is deeply flawed. If it was just meant to protect, say, a farming community from having a subdivision move in, and then those people then start to complain about the effects of agriculture in that region when they were the ones who moved into that region. If it was that, I probably would have been fine with it. But it looks like it may open the door to things like, let's say I own a lot of acreage and I was doing row crops and I wanted to now do industrial scale hog production, so confined animal feeding operations. which bring with it a lot of environmental and societal issues. You know, so you have the smell from the manure. You have the environmental cost associated with things like runoff. And this law appears to be able to open the door to those type of operations while also taking away the ability of folks to complain about it or to bring lawsuits to change it. And so I called my state legislator, Senator P.K. Martin, and we chatted about it. Now, P.K. is a conservative. He's a Republican, but he's also a good guy. He's been on my farm several times. He used to bring his kids many years ago to the Lawrenceville Farmers Market when we still had one. And we had a nice conversation with him. I actually had left him a message, but he picked up the phone and called me. And he said that, you know, he was on the fence about it. He was trying to find out more information. And we talked for a good 20 minutes. So I think the bill did pass. I think it did pass. But I think it opened, by having these conversations, it opens up the door to us possibly making changes. And this goes true in any area of the country, in any state. It's very important to have those conversations. Another important thing that's going on this year in the political arena is the census, both the population census and the ag census. A lot of people may not know that there's an agriculture census that's conducted every 10 years right along with the regular census. And actually, when I'm finished taping this episode, I'm going to sit down and finish my ag census and get it on in, because that determines a lot of what A goes into the farm bill, a lot of how agricultural appropriations are made to states, and then from those states to local counties and communities. And it also has an effect on what types of projects get funded within agriculture. So 5 or 6 years ago, you really didn't see much funding being specifically directed at urban ag. And that's now changing. And I think part of the reason that's changing is because we've actually documenting the number of urban farms and the size of these urban ag operations and stuff like that. So it's very important that you complete both those censuses. And I also think it's important for our young people to get involved in politics. So it's like anything else. You know, young people have been making some fairly cogent arguments about the way some of the things are going on in this country. The economic outlook for a lot of our students, young people coming out of college, is not good. And tackling that, the student loans that they have to take out to get their degrees. And student loans are a whole nother issue. Once again, that's in a political arena, but that's a whole nother issue. But they're coming out and saying, well, look, we've got these student loans and we've got reduced employment opportunities. But it's like anything else. At the end of the day, if you are seeing things being done in government that you don't like, you need to go out to the polls and vote. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, voting doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. It does matter, because there's been some elections recently where there was one, I forget what state it was. It was actually a tie, and it was decided by a coin toss. That was the laws of the state on how they break ties. So we've got to bring young people into the fold, both on the political scene as well as in agriculture. New and beginning farmers are a big focus for USDA. But listen to the definition of a new and beginning farmer. Any farmer who has been farming 10 years or less. So notice it doesn't say anything about age. So technically, I can be a 55-year-old person retiring, say, from corporate America, and I brought me 11 acres somewhere, and I'm a new and beginning farmer, which I'm fine with. I'm fine with those folks, old fogies like me, coming into these spaces and doing small-scale and sustainable ag. But we need to get young people involved, and we really need to specifically concentrate on pulling young folks into agriculture, into the political arena. You know, we need to be looking at farmers 35 and under, 30 and under, and getting them both involved in the political arena as well as in agriculture, at all levels of agriculture. And that's why I want to have Lamario on today, because he's young. I think he's 32. He'll clarify that in his interview. He's African-American, And he's mayor pro tem of the city of Fort Valley down here in Georgia. And so I wanted to have him on just to talk about what he faces as a young legislator and as well as the challenges he faces with his farm. He's trying to do some things with his farm. He's working with a lot of older farmers, and hopefully there's a lot of knowledge transfer that's going on there. So that's what our show is going to be about today. I'm looking forward to having you guys listen to Lamario. And that's it. Go to the polls. Know your legislatures. Know the legislation that is out there. When this bill came up to me, somebody just sent it to me along with some editorial comments about it. But I didn't exactly know where the bill was, and I didn't have time to actually go out and pull down the bill. I just finally had a chance to do that this morning. It's not the end of the world, but there's some significant flaws in it. And we need to make sure that we are looking at these bills to making sure that they don't impede in our interest, but also to advocate for things that we want. So for example, this a couple of years ago, the city of Atlanta got sued by this guy who had something to do with farmers markets. And the current regulations at that time in the city of Atlanta, farmers markets technically were supposed to be managed and fell under the regs as if you were having outdoor events, major outdoor events like concerts or something like that, which meant that you had to have fire extinguishers at every farmers market and just a whole bunch of stuff that really did not apply to community-based farmers markets. They just made no sense. So the city of Atlanta, and based upon some input from some folks working in urban ag especially, got together with the city of Atlanta, and they came up with what is probably one of the more prominent urban ag ordinances in the country. But that came through discussions with legislators and folks just getting together and say, we need this. This is something that we actually need and want. We also need folks running for office. It's one thing to go out and talk to our legislatures, but we also need political leadership in there at all levels and at all ages. And that's not only true for all of the offices that we typically know about, such as your state House and Senate representative, but also on things like FSA boards, on county water commission boards, on farm bureau boards. It's important that young folk again get out, people of color get out and get on these things and run for these offices, and that we need to make sure that our voice are heard in these spaces. Because it's one thing to complain about why you don't like a particular policy or you don't like the way a particular governmental agency is doing something. It's another thing to actually say, well, wait a minute, I'm going to run for this board, or I'm going to have myself or volunteer to be appointed so you can get in and help do the work that you think your folks in your community want to see done. So we're going to be speaking with Lamario. I'm going to have some announcements of conferences, and I hope you enjoy the show. See you in a bit. And now here's some news about some upcoming events. The National Good Food Networks Conference will be held March 10th through the 13th in New Orleans, Louisiana. This is a biennial gathering of local food system workers from across the country to convene and discuss things like food distribution systems, equity in our food systems, and other stuff of importance to local food system stakeholders. I'll have information on this conference posted on the website. The North Carolina A&T Small Farms Week will happen March 20th through the 26th up in Greensboro, North Carolina. This is a week-long event that will consist of educational events, and we'll conclude with them announcing the North Carolina Small Farmer of the Year. The Southern University Small Farm Conference will be held March 18th through March 21st in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. This is a gathering of farmers of color from around the state of Louisiana who gather together to to learn, to do farm tours, and to advance the cause of farmers of color in the state of Louisiana. So those are your announcements. Welcome back to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast. I have the pleasure of having as my guest today, Mr. Lamario Brown. And Lamario is Mayor Pro Tem of Fort Valley, the city of Fort Valley. And he's also a producer, a farming producer. So welcome to the show, Lamario.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thank you for having me this afternoon, Brennan. I'm excited to give you guys an insight on, you know, a young politician like myself in agriculture.
Yeah. And thanks for joining us. So first of all, tell me, and it's something I've always been meaning to ask you, what is a mayor pro tem?
Okay, so it's funny you ask that because I had a couple of kids asked me that. I had to go to the school and talk to them. So they were like, what do you do? What does the mayor pro tem actually do? Well, basically, the mayor pro tem, I act in the official capacity of the mayor. If the mayor is sick, out of town, or something happens where they just can't get to the mayor, then I automatically step in. If he or she is not present for meetings, I have to carry the meetings. I pretty much stay in contact with the entire city council, which I'm pretty much the liaison between the council and the mayor's office.
Okay, so you're a Fort Valley grad, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Class of 2009, Pride. Oh. Okay. Proud graduate of the Fort Valley State University.
That's it. We love our 1890 universities, man. Ooh. And you're also a producer. So tell us a little bit about your farm.
Well, I've been farming goats and pigs for about 6 or 7 years now. And I started out as a hobby in my parents' backyard. You know, they have a 10-acre farm. So fresh out of college, looking for some things to do. And just having land there in Peach County already that my family used to farm. So, you know, I just decided to get into farming. You know, it's a pretty big thing to actually know what you're eating these days, you know. So, mm-hmm. You know, I felt like, hey, you know, the best way to do that is grow my own food, you know. So we started out with actually one goat and one pig. So my dad said, hey, you know, you got to get an opposite sex on the other so they can start producing. So, of course, you know, we got a, you know, male and female of each one. Right now we have 20 goats on the ground. We have about 5 little ones that just came in about 2 months ago. So in the pig business, you know, it's anybody that's raising hogs and pigs, man, you know, it's not a pretty business. You know, we make the ham and the bacon look good, but trust me, man, it's some hard work to go into keeping those hogs in those pens, man. Mm-hmm, and just they rough, you know. So, but yeah. Like I said, you know, the biggest thing is the goats, and we love the goats. They're very low maintenance. They do a lot of cleaning on the property for us. So, you know, that's like I said, the goats. That's my main production.
Okay. Don't y'all have some cattle too? A little bit of cattle.
Well, yeah, I have 2 cows. So officially, my dad said I'm not a cattle farmer just yet. So he's like, I got to get about 2 or 3 more, and then I can call myself a cattle farmer. So, but yeah, we're actually looking into moving into some beef production as well in the near spring. We just got to do some working on our fencing right now. That's one thing about raising cattle. If you don't have a proper fence, man, they'll walk straight through your fence and the neighbors too, probably. So, you know, you have to have your fence up right when you're dealing with cattle. So.
Yeah, there's a guy not too far from us over in Social Circle, I believe he is. Anyway, he's raising like water buffalo. And
oh, wow.
He said that his fencing problems was his biggest problems because they'll go right through.
Yeah. Yeah.
A normal cattle fence, man. So,
right.
And when you
right.
see the size right, of the like, things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like your place, like if your neighbors had some cattle, you know, they would actually, they'd probably tear their fence down trying to get to all that pretty green stuff in your yard.
I know they would.
Yeah, that's what they're enticed by I guess the greenery that they can't get to, even if they got a big bale of hay right there sitting in front of them, they want to go get that fresh green grass. So,
yeah. So how'd you get into politics, Lamario?
Well, I grew up here in Peach County. I've watched the community, you know, I don't want to say kind of going a downfall, but I think around 2008, 2007, you know, around the housing crash, you know, when the housing market crashed, you know, I think a lot of cities and a lot of homeowners, you know, everywhere, they felt that government wasn't doing the right thing then. And there's a lot of questions about that past the past administration. And, you know, but actually what got me involved, I was a senior at Fort Valley, and actually Barack Obama, he actually announced his candidacy in like early 2008. So, you know, just following his platform and his background kind of got me interested in, okay, so what is politics? You know, I asked myself that question. I was actually a 21-year-old senior about to graduate with student loan debt, with all kinds of responsibility that I was about to get ready to take on, but I didn't know exactly what politics was. So, you know, just started going to local meetings, started going to the local city council meetings and really understanding that, hey, so the city council actually dictates how I pay my property taxes and how the light bill and the stuff that I actually have to deal with on a month-to-month or day-to-day basis. So I was like, so if I really want to make a change, I think that'll be the most probably productive way right now that I actually can put my hand on to actually make a change in my local community. So I started out working on a campaign in 2012. I worked on a campaign for a young lady that was running for county commissioner. So I got my feet wet to kind of meet some people, meet some of the movers and shakers here in Peach County and understand, you know, the political process and some of the hot topics that was going on at the time. I was thinking like, man, you know, I do want to get into politics, but I never knew exactly where I could actually be an asset to my community. So I actually got a It was strange. I had got a call from the young lady that was the city administrator at that particular time. Her name was Martha McAfee. And there was this old Coat building that I think it was the Historic Preservation Committee. They wanted to, reserve the building for the historic purpose of it, which it was in a kind of busy business district. So it really didn't fit the makeup of what Fort Valley was trying to do at that time. So she was like, hey, we need some community people to actually come in and talk about this new company that's coming in that's going to bring about 200 jobs. You know, they're going to spend about $25 million in investment. So she was like, the taxes that we're going to get, you know, we really need to go ahead and, you know, try to get this business in here. So, you know, I gathered some of the guys in the community, you know, spoke to them about the issue that was at hand. And, you know, we got a petition signed. We got about, I think it was like 3,000 signatures over the weekend. She was like, man, y'all, and it's only 10,000 people in the city of Fort Valley, Brennan. So in 3 days, we got 3,000. She was like, wow. She's like, you know what? I'm gonna present this to the mayor council. And she presented it to them, and they heard my testimony as far as, you know, the job market here in Fort Valley and how we needed, you know, more jobs with sufficient pay. But right now, it's like, most of the issues that we're dealing with now is more economical issues. And at that time, I said, you know what? We really need to try to get some jobs in here for these folks, man. Because if not, you know, we're gonna dry up and maybe we're just going to be a bedroom community, which that may be okay for some people. But for a town that has a HBCU, our growing population of the millennials, it's the baby boomers, they're moving out, which we still need, you know, a lot of that. The more seasonal perspective. But if we can actually get both of those guys to work together, like me and that young lady did at the time, she reached out to the younger people in the community and she knew like, okay, I can get my generation to listen. I just need y'all to go do the legwork. So, you know, but we worked together and it worked out good. You know, we have that company here now. They're doing great things in Fort Valley. Perfect. Actually, I think you heard about
it. I was going to ask you about that today too.
So that was one of the issues, but they just got online. But you know, it started way back then, and that's how economic development happened. It don't happen overnight. It takes about a good 5 years if it's a good project to get everything in place, the people on board, to get the stakeholders involved. So, but that's how I got involved. Just looking at the hot topics, and you know, I ran in 2015. One, I beat an incumbent. She was in for about 20 years, and I think she had a lot of the Republican philosophy, which is not a problem. But I think she was not the more progressive side of the aisles, which I'm not ashamed to say I'm a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Which it's not an issue, but I understand that a lot of my friends that I work across the table with, they have Republican philosophies. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we figure out a way to get the job done for everybody, because exactly. no matter what color you're representing, we all got to pay these taxes. We all got to put food on the table for our families. So let's work together.
A lot of black people and white people in rural communities. And
yes, sir.
Sometimes we just got to. Unfortunately, the politics in this country has gotten so divisive.
People
talk at each other rather than talk with each other. And that's
absolutely,
you know, hopefully that's going to be changing soon. So you're a young guy. What are you, 34, 35, something like that?
34. I don't feel young though. Everybody keeps telling me that. It's like young. Hey, I remember when I was 24, man.
Oh man. Well, God should bless you and you get to be my age.
Yes, sir.
You know, say,
yes,
I wish I was 34 again.
That's right.
If you're working with young folks, and it's two areas that we really need to get people of color involved in. One is the whole political system, but the other one is to continue to get our folks engaged in agriculture. And to, first of all, to help preserve our rural communities, to make sure that our communities can at least make the attempt at feeding themselves. And especially when it comes to black folk is stopping land loss among our folks. So what are your, as a young politician who's both involved in politics and agriculture, where do you see, well, first of all, let's talk about where you think some of the challenges are right now.
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, it's in the land ownership. I mean, there's I don't know. I couldn't name probably five farmers in Peach County that own the property that they're farming on.
Wow.
Like just clear own title, no air property, no I'm releasing it from such and such. You know, there it's a big disparity in when you're talking about land ownership and black farmers. So, you know, I mean, they're in a lot of the programs that even the USDA, NRCS, FSA, all these guys offer, you got to have a clear title or some kind of lease agreement. And it seems like our community, they don't like to sit down and talk about a succession plan. Like, you know, it's crazy for an adult to think they can live, I don't know, 60, 70, 80, 90 years and not have a succession plan or not even thinking about a succession plan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 34 and I ain't even got kids yet, Brennan. I'm thinking about my kids' grandkids. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to put things in place now where they don't have to have this discussion that we're having. And and I think that's what it's going to take. It's going to take more of the new farmers and some of the older farmers that's willing to actually start sitting down with their family members and having that hard conversation about, okay, so what happens if daddy died? Or what happens if mama died? What happens if this happens? So, I mean, we got to know. We don't want to be in the, you know, sitting here like a deer in headlights if we, you know, if dad died and nobody knows who owns the property. We thought we owned it all of these years, and come to find out, this guy down the road actually own it. So, I mean, I've heard stories like that, though, Brandon. So that's the scary thing about it to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of focus now on heirs property issues. I know the Federation just had a very large conference in Atlanta, I think this past weekend or the weekend before last, about it. It's just such a vexing issue to fix, you know. It's one that requires money.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It requires money to resolve these title issues and that type of stuff. What other challenges do you see in your work, especially as it applies to rural and semi-rural communities like Fort Valley?
Well, I think when we have a seat at the table, we often forget about, you know, and I'm just going to be straight up, we forget about where we come from. And we get in the room and we're in the room and we're so tickled that we're just in the room. And I'm like, I mean, Brandon, no offense, man. I'm 34 years old. The closest council member to me is probably about 69, I think.
Wow.
So you can imagine what our conversations are. I mean, it's more of a respect thing. And it's like, okay, I have to respect you because you're like my grandfather's age. But if you're saying something off the wall that's going to hurt my community, do I still say, oh, I respect grandpa? Grandpa, wait a minute. You got to do the right thing by the people. So, I mean, it's like we gotta break down those barriers and actually start having a real conversation about the issues. That's what I see a lot of times, man. A lot of times people get in these rooms and they talk about what they're going to do, and they don't come out of the rooms with an actual plan.
Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think another thing is that we overall don't, I think one of the things that frustrates me, mm-hmm. Lamario, is when I see organizations that have been around for a while, whether they be political mm-hmm. organizations or whether mm-hmm. they be organizations involved in agriculture, that some organizations don't think there's a need to identify and groom young leaders. And even more, they're not bringing those young folks to the table because we need those ideas. We need what the young people want to bring to the table. And what I'm seeing now, unfortunately, in some cases, is that young folks just say, hey, well, look, we're tired of asking you to let us get involved. We're just going to do it ourselves. And then that causes some sort of
friction.
Fissures, because then the older organizations, well, you guys are just wet behind the ears. What are you going to do for us?
Yeah, there you go.
So,
you know, I mean, and you know, it's some give and take because there's a lot of things that, Brendan, like I said, we know each other, and I know you. You know, you've been through a lot, and I can't imagine what you've gone through as a grown man from 34 to where you are now. I mean, you probably could tell me some stories like, look, man, I know you're looking at it this way, but look, trust me, you may want to do it this way. So, I mean, there, like I said, it's some give and take, but I love talking with you and working with you because you have that give, take, respect relationship. You're like, look, I'm not going to just shove something down your throat. I want to know what you want to bring to the table. So that's what we need. We need more people around the table like that. Like, look, man, I ain't going to be here long, so I'm about to get this baton off. You better be ready to catch it. So, you know.
Yep, exactly, man. Exactly. And do you know Frank Taylor out of Mississippi?
Why does that name sound?
Winston County. He went through our Southern Zag Leadership Program. Like us. He was in the very first class.
Right. Frank Taylor.
Yeah, he got that big booming voice.
He was in the class. Yes, but his daughter was in the class with me. She was in my class.
Okay, yeah.
Tierra Tubman.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I talked with him earlier today, and he was echoing the same thing that you said, Lamario, that there has to be, if we're going to tackle a lot of the issues that face rural areas specifically, but just generational issues in general, there has to be more of a spirit of cooperation between organizations, you know.
Absolutely.
All this turf war stuff has got to go, you know. And one thing I was telling him, I was really proud about how Mississippi, those organizations seem to be starting to work, to really work together. I think they brought in like three or four beginning farm and rancher grants into the state.
Oh, wow. Wow. You know? That's good. That's good.
And so. Just doing that type of work. So when'd you get a pecan grove, man?
Oh, man. Look, as I was talking about the farm and about the animals, I was like, wait a minute. I just forgot all about the 5-acre pecan grove, man. Uh-huh. So in March, right? So I was actually, I was riding out to, this true story. I was riding out to the cemetery to visit, you know, my grandparents' grave plot. So, and I always noticed this pecan grove that, you know, it sits off on the, you know, the far left side as I'm going to the grave site. So, you know, one day I was like, you know what? I said, because I knew the guy that owned it. I said, let me call him, man. Because he's actually, he used to be the president of Fort Valley State University. And he was also the county commissioner for here in Peach County for 8 years as well. And then he retired. But he was like, you know what? I tell you what. He was like, if you want to work this pecan orchard, he's like, I'll let you do it. He was like, man, because back in 97, he had a issue where I think he had an asthma attack, and his doctor told him the reason he did have the, you know, the asthma problem was because of the spray. I guess he was spraying on the pecan trees then. So, the doctor told him he couldn't go back out there anyway. So his wife was like, well, you know what, Lamar, it's your lucky day because he can't do nothing with it anyway. We worked out a deal, and luckily this year we signed the lease in March. But this year, I got my information in time enough where I was able to take advantage of the CSP program.
Oh, okay.
For the plain clover and, you know, just having it for, you know, conservation purposes. Mm-hmm. So that worked out good. You know, we're actually, we've cleared majority of the pecan grove off. It's like I said, it's been dormant for the past 25 years, I think.
Wow.
So I got to get a scout. I got to get some guys to come out and look at them and make sure, you know, we can actually get some production done. But I'm actually excited, man. They're, you know, he told me he planted them in, man, I want to say he planted them in 93, I think.
Wow.
So they're fairly, I don't want to say older, but they're ready for production. If we can get some fertilizer on them and some cover crop on the off season to add nitrogen to the ground, and you know, we'll be rolling hopefully next year, man. I can bring you some pecans, man, and hopefully the wife can whiff me some pecan pie, man.
All right, man. I hear you. We could do a little bartering like that. You can do a little bartering like that. And so, Mary, I read this article that was in the Black Farmers Network.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, what is that network? That was the first time I'd ever heard of them.
Her name is Dr. Walmack. She is, I think she told me she worked with, I can't think of the organization right now. I'm sorry. If you had asked me yesterday, I probably remember, but like it's been a long day. But the young lady that reached out to me, though, her name was Candace Dante. Yeah. And she's actually with the, I think it's an organization called Black Cowgirl Girls or something like that. So I'm sorry. It's Southern, because she's gonna kill me for messing up the name. It's Southern Styles and Stairs. That's the name of her organization. But she works with Dr. Walmack, and she actually I think she got a grant last year to do some work around Black farmers and the challenges as far as when it comes to acquiring land and, you know, what does it take to actually be production, to me, to be productive as a Black farmer. And also she wanted to see if we were interested in actually hosting a conference, a young Black farmers conference in Fort Valley, spring 2020. So she, and crazy part about it, she knows the president here at the university. She said they worked together at, I think it was Georgia State. It was one college. I think he used to be the president at where they worked together. So she was like, hey, you know, I know Dr. Jones well. She's like, this would be a good PR for Peach County. You know, it definitely brings surrounding farmers, you know, into the community, so we can actually all talk about the issues and hopefully get some good things out of the conference. So.
Oh, okay. So is planning for that underway now?
Yes, sir. We actually had a meeting about 2 weekends ago. You know Cedric Rowe, right?
Yeah.
He's the peanut farmer down at Albany.
Yeah, I got my fingers crossed that he gets his grant.
Yeah. I'm praying for him too, man. So, yeah, and the other young lady, Kanisha Miller, she's an EM Farms over in Culloden, Georgia. Mm-hmm. So she's doing a lot of, I think she does some row cropping. She does some canning as far as like jellies, pies and different things like that. So she got a lot going on. But so the three of us, you know, they pulled us in as the local farmers here in Peach County, and pretty much I guess the Black was in Georgia that they knew, you know, that was young, and they did a story. Actually did a story on all three of us. So when I get time, I'll send you those.
Yeah, please send me that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they have some awesome stories, man. Like, and I mean, I know Sergio well, and I was like, wait a minute, man. I didn't know all this about you. Like,
yeah.
He that dude got a lot going on. Man. Uh-huh. I got to get in on that. So, you know, me and him actually looking at doing some future organic peanut stuff in the future. So hopefully we'll get that done.
Yeah, yeah. He's really, really humble to see what he's accomplished. All the stuff he's accomplished at his young age, you don't talk about it that much, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I told him, you know, because someone had to tell me that, man. They was like, look, ain't nobody going to share your story like you. Mm-hmm. So you got to make sure you have that story ready So when it's time to sell it, you can sell it well. So yeah. I was like, you know, and he's starting to do that now. He's like, man, you know, that's why I want to get out, do these interviews, start doing, you know, more interacting and more networking, because we're missing out on opportunities because we don't network with each other. And that's one thing I see as Black people we don't do enough of. We don't we don't use our resources. We don't reach out to each other. When I think I was talking to you one time, you was like, man, I was so mad. He was like, you were seeing farmers that actually put in for the grants and, you know, they didn't actually kind of reach out and understand certain things. I was like, wait a minute. So you have certain resources around you and you decide to not use them. Like, what part of being successful is that? That's
exactly.
That's success number one. Use your resources. Make sure you reach out to the people around you to make sure you're successful in what you're doing.
Yeah. And you know, Lamario Farm, I'm sure you... your father and a lot of old timers down in Fort Valley can tell you about the times when USDA didn't even want to have anything to do with Black farmers, you know?
Yeah.
Bad information would tell them that they've used up all their funding for programs. So now as you're getting a more diverse labor force at some of these agencies, it's just crazy that people don't approach them, you know?
Yeah. And most of the time they're wanting you to ask them these questions because, you know, I think that's us, you know, what that's another problem we have as Black folks. And even me, before I actually start reaching out, you know, we're afraid of actually asking certain questions because we don't know where that line is. We don't understand the law enough to know. It's not a conflict of interest if the rep is actually telling you how to get this money. There are requirements that actually they have written out. So that's their job to tell you how to get this money. So, you know, and I think that's our issue. We're a little timid when it comes to that. And we just kind of get around that and just realize, like, hey, it's public information. So
Yeah. I mean, there's some historical precedent just based upon a lot of discrimination from the USDA. People may be a little bit gun shy now, but you're right. Situation has changed. And
but you know, Farmer told me, I didn't mean to cut you off, but he told me it changed, but we still got a problem in the White House, and that's Donald Trump. And I was like, okay, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. But so I don't know now. You know, there's different opinions when you ask certain farmers, and I couldn't tell them, you know, one way or the other, because I mean there's farmers that I know, and they say there's programs out there that President Trump he's implemented that actually works out in their favor. So, you know, I can't say, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. So, you know,
I have my own feelings about President Trump, but I will say this is that agricultural policy just doesn't move through him. So,
I mean,
everybody's making a big deal about this tariff thing, but there was also some really, really good things that happened for small scale and sustainable agriculture over the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
The SAIR program got a bump. They finally gave the 2501 program baseline funding. Yeah. So if you just get caught up with who's at the top,
you're
going to be missing a lot of the good stuff that's happening.
Absolutely.
You know, because Black and white politicians in rural areas, at the end of the day, they're going to have some of the same issues. And to go back to the point you brought out earlier when we first started talking, is that a lot of the stuff is local, Lamario. That's
right.
Where a lot of the change happens. Like, I hear people could complain about Commissioner Gary Black. Well, I happen to like. I happen to like.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was surprised he came as close. I mean, he won pretty comfortably, but it shouldn't have been as close as it was. And
the
Democrat who was opposing him, I don't even think he had a background in agriculture. But I think what happened, a lot of people was just going into that voting booth and just pulling the lever for a Democrat.
Not
knowing, you know, what that position does. And, you know, Commissioner Black is going to be, there's a lot of big ag in the state of Georgia, and he's going to be taking care of big ag. But I'm going to tell you, before he got in there, those of us who do the work that we do, we pretty much had nobody to talk to at the Department of Ag. You know?
He's at least
shown himself to be open-minded and willing to at least listen, you know?
Well, you know, funny story, though. I don't know if he remembers me, but I said one day when I, you know, probably become president, I'll walk up to him and be like, hey, you remember me? But I had my intern at the Department of Agriculture, but I actually did mine through the Animal Protection Division. And, you know, he was the state veterinarian for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we actually had to have a meeting before they, and this was around 2007, 2008. This was my senior year when I started to do my intern. They were actually getting ready to put a, I think it was an equine or either a, like an adoption center at the women's prison down in Hawkinsville. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had to have a meeting, and I'm sitting there as an intern and just listening at some of the stuff that he was talking about, I could tell that he actually had a more agriculture background than anybody in the room, because he was saying some things like, okay, so what about who's going to feed them? I mean, as far as this, you know, what kind of health is it going to be? And he would actually always bring it back to the veterinarian side. But he would start with the agricultural piece. And like you said, like it, he may just identify with Republicans, but his philosophy is for the entire people, you know? So I'm like, I mean, like I said, I don't get caught up in the color lines too much. You know, I just, I focus on the issues, and I think it's just completely wrong, man, that certain people before me and your time just felt like it was okay to draw lines in the sand, and you rep a certain color, you know, we ain't gonna figure, you know, you can't get to this table. So, I mean, it's just a lot of old, just crazy ways that we as a whole have to just let go and just move forward and try to be productive in what we're doing in today's society. So,
Lamar, in your work, I wanted to talk to you about just a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. And, you know, I've been advocating for urban ag for quite some time. Now it's all the rage. You know, they're even starting an agency within USDA to deal with urban ag, which I think is good.
Okay. Right.
But I never was under the impression that urban agriculture was going to feed the world. I thought it had its, I thought it could do some good things about addressing food insecurity in some urban areas and addressing food deserts and that type of stuff and connecting people more with their local food system. But where I really saw the big value of urban ag was beginning to act as a gateway from the more rural communities where the land holdings are a lot larger and where we can grow a lot more food with those urban markets. And unfortunately, at least in Georgia, I'm not seeing that happen. I know Mrs. Shirley Sherrod is something that she gets very frustrated about, and something I'm going to try to be working with her to advance is just how do we connect those farmers in Fort Valley and Albany with some of these larger markets up in the in Atlanta, Georgia. So I just want to get your thoughts about that.
Well, I mean, most people, they always say, hey, man, my city is the best city to be in. We got this, we got that. But Brendan, I'm telling you, Fort Valley is the central location to everything. Like we're not so congested that you can't get in and out of Fort Valley and do what you got to do. So, you know, the idea of having like a mid-state processing facility here in Peach County, it's not a bad idea because, I mean, we sit right in the center of Columbus, Savannah, and even Tifton is not that far. But like you said, to get to the big market of Atlanta and some of these other metro, you know, metro cities, like you got to have a small hub. And I think Fort Valley is conducive for that.
Yes.
I mean, we have a university that trains USDA inspectors. And here we are, the city of Fort Valley. We don't take a benefit of that. You know, we just lost a grocery store because we don't have proper production and our producers here in Fort Valley. Like, I can remember stories where guys telling me where, you know, they didn't know what to do with some of the food that the farmers bought here in Fort Valley because it was an abundance of it. You know, you had guys coming from Montezuma, which is Macon County, Taylor County, even from Macon coming to Fort Valley, you know, because they knew like this was the market to actually sell, you know, your produce. So, every councilman or elected official going, they're going to advocate for that community. But I'm telling you, Peach County is thriving for some economic development. We have some great incentive package that we can actually offer some business owner that's listening, that really want to invest in some big ag and some probably get a good investment on their, you know, a good return on their investment. So I think we really do need to have a serious conversation with the university, the local stakeholders, the state, you know, because they're going to benefit, because if you can actually clear up some of these food deserts, like Taylor County, the next county over from me, they like probably 12 miles from where I am. They don't even have a grocery store there. Yeah. Saint Anir's grocery store to them may be 30 miles from them, and that's like in a whole nother city. And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, they don't have a farmer around there that's processing their food, that's at least picking the greens and selling them. Like, they're like, no, we don't know them if they are. So, you know, I think we have to do a better job of finding those local farmers, and like you say, in the urban area, and actually, you know, helping them tell their stories. And I think that's what Black Farmers Network, that's one of their biggest things. Like, they want to put out more of the stories that we're doing. Like, if you have a good testimony of urban agriculture here in Atlanta or Fort Valley, wherever you may be, they want to come to your place and share your story and spread it to the people around you so they can actually start benefiting from that fresh produce or that fresh food, or, you know, just having a grocery store or some kind of farmer's market that's within, you know, miles of you. I feel like I said, I can't express enough. It's just crazy that we don't, like, the government should make sure every community have a grocery store. Like, you, like, and it's crazy. Every community has a post office, but you don't have a grocery store. Community has a jail, but you don't have a grocery store. Like, that's the kind of stuff that bothers me in these meetings. Like, that's what I get heated about. Like, we waste, like, just tax money dollars on just crazy stuff, man. Let me. I'm gonna get off my soapbox. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
That's all right, man. That's what this show is all about. I'm sure I'm gonna have some people disagree with you once I put this episode up. But that's what it's about. It's about stimulating conversation. So before you go, I let you go. You mentioned Pure Flavor. I want you to talk a little bit about that, because that was a pretty innovative project. And as we heard a little bit, it's something that you helped get behind and push forward. Can you tell us, our listeners, a little bit about what that whole project is about and was about?
Okay, so the Pure Flavor there, I think it's going to end up being 140-acre hydroponic greenhouse. They're starting out with tomatoes and cucumbers, and it's no secret that the state of Georgia allowing the University of Georgia and Fort Valley State University to actually practice and do some research on medical marijuana, which is a booming market here for the next couple of years here in Georgia. So I really believe that that's the overall plan. You know, I mean, just being honest, Brennan, I mean, you can grow a lot of tomatoes, but I think the word I'm getting from the medical resources that I have, they're saying it's actually some breakthrough and some real actual research that can be done that probably can help out some of the autistic kids, some of the Down syndrome issues, some of the more of the obesity issues. Like, I've even heard them talk about, and I've always heard about glaucoma, you know, with vision problems. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good things that could possibly come out of this research. And I think the state legislature saw that and the governor saw it, and he felt like that was a great thing to at least give these two research universities in the state opportunity to actually do it. And back to the point, Pure Flavor located in Fort Valley for a reason, and that land that we actually worked to get them, you know, it was a decent price that they actually got it for. And like I said, I don't think they could have got it, you know, in another community cheap as they got it here in Peach County. But that's part of the incentive package that we can offer you here in Peach County. We have low costs when you're talking about real estate. You know, and there's a lot of investment that can be done here. And like I said, your return would be very, very lucrative if you can actually get in the right market. And I think that's what Pure Flavor saw. I'm sure they knew some lobbyists that actually went in and lobbied for, you know, that legislation. That's that's how politics work, though. Yeah. The squeakiest wheel get the most oil. Unfortunately, some of the people that, like I said, may disagree with marijuana being passed in the state of Georgia. But let's see how the tax, you know, digest look after the next couple of years once it is full in effect. And actually, we're reaping the benefits the way we're supposed to reap them, and not just, you know, we're just having the, what do they call it? My dad used to call it the Woodstock concert.
You even know what that is, man?
Hey, I saw a movie, man. That's how I figured out what it was. So.
I think that's going to be, you and I have been trying to work to get some meat processing down there, and I don't think that's a project that's entirely dead yet. I think we, though, will have better luck and a quicker return on getting some sort of vegetable processing done down there.
Absolutely.
As opposed to meat originally. And I know Fort Valley was looking at doing some sort of packing house. I think the building they were looking at
Yeah, it's actually in the city of Fort Bend.
Yeah, it would cost too much to retrofit, I think, is what I heard about it. So,
okay.
But like you said, there's plenty of land and stuff down there. And love the work that you're doing, man. And to my fellow Southern University Ag Leadership alumni, you keep up the good work, and I appreciate you taking some time with me today.
Man, absolutely, Brent. I told my dad, I said, look, I gotta run and do this interview for Brennan. And he's like, yeah, man, tell him. I said, hey, man, tell him, you know, he'll be in Fort Valley, stop by and grab him some goat meat. We'll hook him up.
All right. I'm going to hold him to that. I want to sit down and hear his version of the bull event that happened down there.
Oh, man.
Because I know he has a funny take on it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, man, but I think they got it all worked out. They went to some training over at Southern University, which was good. So, you know, I think it boiled down to the university not really being up to speed on the type of tools that they actually need. I don't think there's no person on the university campus that would actually harm any animal, you know, research or either, you know, for production reasons. Like, you know, I mean, we have a state-of-the-art facility and the way they process those animals there, it's like the best I've ever seen everywhere. The best I've seen anywhere. So, you know, like I said, that's just, to me, I mean, I don't have a problem with PETA, you know, doing what they do, because sometimes you need to kind of poke the bear to make sure, like, look, let's make sure this didn't happen the way it was actually reported that it happened, because there's a lot of times things like that do happen, though, Brennan. And sadly enough, everybody don't love animals like we do. I mean, we, you know, even though we have to eat and, you know, it's part of the whole survival of life, but there's a way that you do everything. You know, you don't just go out and chop a bull head off just because you feel like it. You know, there's a way to do everything. So,
All right, Lamari, I want to thank you, man. Looking forward to seeing you soon. You going to any conferences this year, SOG or Georgia Organics? Or?
Yes, I'll definitely be at the Southern SOG Conference. I'm looking forward to that, man. Hopefully I can catch up with Frank Scott. You know, he's the young mayor over in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
So hopefully we can catch up. I missed him last year, but I'm we'll try to catch up, man, and you know, talk about some ideas. They're doing some great things as far as urban ag in Little Rock as well.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to kind of pick his brain and see what we can do in a smaller city like Fort Valley to first revitalization back to some of these communities.
So. All right. Well, I'll be there. So looking forward to seeing you. And thanks again for joining us on the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast, Lamari.
All right, man. Have a good one. Thank you again. Tell the wife and say hello.
I sure will. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast. Please visit our website at sustainableagwriter.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Please tell your friends and colleagues about the show and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Once again, thank you for listening to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast, sustainable ag news and views.